Sustaining It Live with Rita Steele on 95BFM.
Hello, Rita Steele. Are you there?
Kia ora. How are you?
Good. Good. Now, what are we chatting about on this evening's edition of Sustaining It Live?
We are going to talk about our very convoluted and delusional emissions trading scheme.
Okay. Now, emissions trading schemes sort of operate globally, correct?
Yeah, they sure do. They tend to be in most kind of developed nations. And the idea is that they are a market solution to sort of attempting to address, I guess, the fact that we don't include our atmosphere when we are looking at the cost of production of things.
Boiling it down to brass tacks, what happens? Say we have a bunch of forests. We go, well, we've got a bunch of forests. X country that doesn't have these forests has to pay us?
No, what we do is we say we have over here a steel smelter. That's probably a nice easy one. And that produces X tons of greenhouse gas emissions in a year. And so we say to them, you need to offset this by buying carbon credits to offset your emissions. And then they go and buy carbon credits. Now, they can either buy them in the past, we've actually let them buy international ones, which has ended up in absolutely, corrupt, like, bullshit credits, basically, from countries that, don't have them. But more recently, they've had to buy them from New Zealand, and that usually and increasingly is about buying them from forestry.
So the money goes to the government? Is it a tax?
Yeah,
is it like another form of tax? Is it just like you emit carbon, so pay us more tax?
Yeah, I mean, look, the idea is that if the companies have to pay for their pollution, that they then look for more innovative ways to reduce their carbon or their emissions.
Yes.
That's the idea. In a place where, you've got like a cap and trade where you've got a maximum amount of carbon credits that you have a year, that potentially could work. But what we're seeing is that people are just kind of going, oh, I want to, do this polluting thing, so I'll just buy a whole bunch of credits over here. And so we're now getting a whole lot of, forest pop up, and carbon price is actually pretty low, so it's not really an incentive to do anything.
Are we seeing more, like, say, radiata pine planted because of carbon pollution?
Yeah, we are. And that's something that the government wants to change. I was just messaging one of New Zealand's, most well-known environmental activists and top scientists, Dr. Mike Joy, about this, trying to get my head around some of the details. And he said, you do realise this is completely delusional. The idea that planting some forests is going to offset, millions of years or billions of years worth of carbon that we are burning and putting into the atmosphere is actually delusional. Like, and his point is that actually even fighting over the details of the trading scheme is keeping us kind of a little bit preoccupied while there's still a bunch of polluters out there, and also it makes us kind of pretend that we can fix this when
Rita,
literally
is there any way that we can successfully re-establish native bush? I mean, it feels like that's slightly more nuanced than...
Sort of what I was sort of asking when I was messaging him, because he, tends to know a bit more about that because he's in policy, a little bit more around the details of it. And for me, what I don't fully understand is if you are planting pine and you get these credits every year, then when you sell them, my understanding is you do have to pay a little bit of that back, but it's a very tiny portion of the credit that you actually got. And I go, well, then who's to say that that pine is going on to live a life forever, you know, because that's the idea. It's not, you know, then it's not being burnt or whatever. So the government's just come out and given four new options for how we kind of, I guess, improve the situation. And none of them offer the native solution, because I go, hang on a second, if you go and you buy 100 acres of farmland, that steep farmland, and you go, this is better off in natives, and you plant those natives, then what you're going to get for those natives for the first 15 years is a whole lot less than you would get for planting pine. And so I don't really understand why we don't have a higher quality carbon price for our native forests. Like, to me, that seems like a no-brainer. And also, those forests are going to be permanent, because nobody needs, you know, to cut down a bunch of, you know, these native trees. Like, it's they're not valuable on a commercial level.
So the
options that I just, you know, and I'll just quickly run through them, because they're asking for consultation, but you know, the options are to increase demand by opening up our credits to overseas buyers, which will ideally increase the price, which then makes producers look, you know, for alternatives, or possibly separating emissions reductions from emissions removal, like forestry. So going, okay, if you do something to reduce your emissions, we're going to incentivize that differently than if you're just going to buy credits. Then there's also a couple of other kind of versions of that, where it's like, you know, do we then have an ETS where the forestry is sold to the government, and then the government chooses how to utilize them and regulate them? The last one is to reduce the number of units sold, which would also push up the price. So they've got a few, like, tinkering kind of things, but I guess, you know, like, yeah, I didn't really understand why we're not looking at increasing native forestry, because that seems like a no-brainer.
Do you know of any really good examples of native bush that has been re-established?
No, but I do know that there's a company called Ecos that specialise in New Zealand carbon credits through native planting, native forestry, permanent native forestry planting. So there is an option there. I'm sure there's a couple of others doing it. That's just kind of the bigger one I know about. And when you say, you know, is there examples of reforestation? I mean, the Waitakere's is a great example of that. If you look at pictures of the 30s and the 40s, this was a lot of it was farmland, so it's all been kind of re-established. And there's lots of pockets of it around.
From my house in Avondale, looking out west, you can still see the slips in the Waitakes. Any work being done on the slips to, you know, like replant them or establish native bush on the slips once again?
No, not really. Not. I mean, a lot of them are on private land, the ones you can see. And there's a few houses, and they are trying to protect the houses, and there's some work being done. But in terms of, you know, slips and erosion, a lot of that is just a natural process, right? So then you'd get your succession trees going and try and, like, re-establish the ground and stuff. What we're going to probably see in the Waitakere's in particular is a lot more of this, because we're losing our kauri. And once you lose your kauri, they're your keystone species. So they're the ones that, you know, are holding up large bits of land. Once they start going, then we're going to probably see some more erosion. So, sort of a bit off topic, but, yeah, there is some pretty big concerns around, you know, how we protect our forests.
We've had a couple of texts through. Someone saying "if radiata pine." Someone else is saying same person saying carbon offset has to be made native only. Why not plant stands of totara or rimu?
The conversation I was just having with Mike was that I can't remember exactly what the number was, but it was, when I was looking at this, when I was studying ETS, you know, probably 6 or 7 years ago, I remember looking up what it would take to live your life And I think it wasn't even international travel. It was just normal travel, normal power usage. And you'd use about 4 hectares from memory of native forest a year permanently. Like, there's just no way that we can offset our lifestyles, with planting alone, unfortunately.
Okay.
So it's sort of like, it's one lever in the bigger picture of things, but I guess we just can't have it so that we go, oh, it's okay, we can live our lives and offset over here. And it's really difficult because we always get to this injunction where we go, we all want to do something more, but, you know, without structural systemic change, no one, well, you know, there's a few people that go, well, stuff this, I'm going to go and live on a farm and be self-sustainable, but for the most part, you know, we all want to just take in society. We just need a less harmful society, one that's just got a lighter footprint, right?
What's the style of life we have to lead? Don't we have to go back to like a 50s
Do
style
we have to
of
go
life?
Back to monkey?
Yeah. I've read 1960s. I also read Costa Rica's carbon footprint is about where the globe needs to be, I think, from memory. So, and you know, I've been to Costa Rica. It's not the worst place in the world. You know, they're not living. I mean, they live a pretty simple life, but it's certainly not an awful life.
Yes.
So, I think that the people that go, oh, you know, we have to go back to, you know, sticks and stones and mud houses. It's not quite that dramatic. It's actually quite a nice life, and we probably wouldn't have all the stresses of having to keep up with the Joneses and, you know, and there's lots of other things we can do as well to improve our lives. Like when we do build, we build with, you know, thermal mass in mind and all those sorts of things like passive heating. And, you know, it's just that we just probably need a structural change of how we do things and one that will benefit us, I think. Like, at the moment, we all live individual, like, housing and everything's very, like, we've got to fight and fend for ourselves, whereas, you know, we grew our societies as together and, you know, going back to that would actually be much more healthy psychologically
I think. With that, though, where does our decrease on our dependence of oil come in? Because I imagine that's probably going to be the biggest component to any of this, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, we're lucky in New Zealand because we've got sunshine and we've got lots of water and we've got, so you know, even like you can kind of jimmy up a little bit of a your own hydro and get some energy that way. So we're not living in the middle of a place where, you know, it's icy around and we've got nothing to work with. We've got quite a bit to work with in New Zealand. But yeah, I mean, it's about things like working from home and not being asked to, you know, fly to the other side of the world for work. I mean, I constantly get that and I'm like, does this need to happen? Like, this probably could happen on Zoom and I could save, you know, the planet a whole lot of pain, you know? So, yeah, it's just pretty much expectations. But it's hard because, you know, I say that and I look like an absolute moron. So, because they're like, what a hippie. And that shouldn't be the case, you know?
Right,
like, that shouldn't be the case. They should be like, oh, yeah, good on you. Like,
but I mean, I guess I also say that because you were talking about, you know, like building houses. And I think there was this one story on TV1. I don't know if it was Sunday. It probably was. That looked into the construction industry and just how much oil and plastics are involved in that whole sector.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, like, in, you know, even concrete, steel, like, the whole thing is just, you know, built for using, you know, we've got such a huge reliance on oil.
Sounds like we need to go living in mud huts with sticks and stones, Rita. Sorry to break it to you.
But then also we do use it. There's a lot of waste.
Bivouac. Heard of it? Live in that bivouac in the bush. Cut down a couple.
Yeah, but because it's cheaper to just throw out this stuff. A lot of stuff that's reusable just gets thrown out, you know. So I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, reusing. And you know, we've gone through a whole period of time where we've built houses that don't last more than 30 years. Like, that's nuts. You know, like, so you know, like, technically you should be able to build a house that lasts for a couple of hundred years. Like, there's no, and then, you know, once you've got that, then it starts paying itself off because it's housing so many people, you know. So we just need a different way. We just need to get rid of, like, this kind of abundance, this you know, that we're used to, and just start thinking a bit smarter about how we use what we've got.
All right, Rita Steele, sage words to live by.
Yeah, so just get out there if you can. Yeah, if you can. They've opened up submissions until the 19th of August. So you just go NZ Gov Emissions Trading Scheme 2023 consultation, and jump on there and just say, you know, we need something meaningful, like just tinkering with it and making it so that we can make more pollution. At a bare minimum, we should be capping and trading. Yes. So, you know, this is the most we can
do. No more radiator pine, natural bush only.
Yeah, this is the most we can have. But yeah, write and ask for native planting, permanent planting, that sort of thing. And hopefully we'll get a better scheme.
All right, Rita. Hey, thank you very much. We'll chat
to you
in 4 days.
Have a good week.
Thank you. Bye. Cheers,
mate. Sounds good. Bye.
That was Sustaining Alive with Rita Steele on 95 BFM.